Agenda item 12.
Yes.
Our TM matter for the Lower Salinas River. Mr. Briggs?
Yes, this is total maximum daily load, or TMDL, sorry for the acronym, for fecal coliform in the Lower Salinas River watershed. And our proposal to you is to adopt some actually pretty simple basin plan amendments. And they're very similar to, if not exactly the same, as what the board has already adopted in the watershed to the north and the Pajaro. Pete Osmolowski of our staff is going to be making our presentation this morning. Welcome, Pete.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and board members. I think we're getting ready to launch it here. Yes, this is agenda item number 12. Proposed basin plan amendments for the Lower Salinas River watershed, which includes total maximum daily loads for fecal coliform and amending the basin plan to add the watershed to two existing prohibitions. Our recommendation is to adopt the proposed amendments, which also includes a supplemental sheet with proposed changes that you have been provided with. The proposed amendments to the basin plan include total maximum daily loads and implementation plan for fecal coliform, add the watershed to an existing domestic animal waste discharge prohibition, and add the watershed to an existing human fecal material discharge prohibition. As Mr. Briggs alluded to, it's worth noting that we are recommending, with respect to these prohibitions, that the board add the watershed to an existing prohibition that was adopted for the Pajaro River watershed last year in March 2009. Multiple stream reaches in the Lower Salinas River watershed were listed as impaired in 2002 due to excessive fecal indicator bacteria levels, FIB levels. FIBs are groups of bacteria like fecal coliform and E. coli, which are measured and used as surrogates to assess for the potential presence of pathogens in the water column. So that's what FIBs are. Water quality sampling largely conducted between 1999 and 2006, routinely showed sustained and widespread impairments due to fecal indicator bacteria. The numeric water quality criteria that was used to assess for impairment is the Basin Plan's fecal coliform water quality objective for water contact recreation, also known by its acronym as REC-1. And I'll be coming back shortly with some more information on the water quality objective shortly. This is a regional map of the Central Coast showing the location of the Salinas River watershed and also the location of the TMDL project area. The focus area of the TMDL project is the Lower Salinas River watershed, and the reason that's the focus area is that the Upper Salinas River was not listed as impaired for bacteria, nor was the Elkhorn Slough area. So the focus of the TMDL project is the Lower Salinas River watershed. This is a closer view of the TMDL project area shown on a shaded relief map. Two things to take note of are the stream reaches, which are shown in blue, and also three prominent urban landmarks to geographically orient you: the city of Salinas and the communities of Castroville and Gonzales. This is another map of the project area. I'd like to draw your attention to two prominent features on this map. The color-shaded areas represent different categories of land use as defined in the legend in the upper right inset. And secondly, the red lines indicate the location and extent of bacteria-impaired stream reaches that have been identified. And briefly, I'd like to show you and orient you to some of the more prominent impaired stream reaches. This is the Salinas River, the lower Salinas River. This is the old Salinas River, Tembladero Slough, the Reclamation Canal, Yablon Creek Watershed and Town Creek, Alisal Creek, Chular Creek. The thing to take away from this slide is that there are a substantial number of stream impairments in the project area, and they extend geographically throughout a large extent of the lower Salinas River watershed. Now, this is basically the same information on the last slide, except this time all of the impairments are shown in tabular format so that you can see them listed. The left-hand column represents the coastal confluence receiving water bodies, and the right-hand column represents their respective upstream tributaries that ultimately drain into those coastal receiving water bodies. Based on our source analysis, these are the probable sources that are contributing to or causing the condition of impairment. Storm sewer systems from urbanized areas, also known as MS4 entities. Discharges from domestic animal waste. Discharges from wildlife. Illegal dumping. Spills and leaks associated with sanitary sewer systems. And discharges of waste from homeless encampments. Now, a total maximum daily load is the maximum amount of a given pollutant that a water body can receive without exceeding water quality standards. That's a total maximum daily load, a TMDL. Staff are proposing a concentration-based TMDL. Now, what this means is that the TMDL will be equal to the Basin Plan Fecal Coliform Water Quality Objective for Contact Recreation, REC 1. Expressing the TMDL as a concentration ensures that beneficial uses are maintained across all flow conditions and across all loading conditions. Simply put, in order to achieve the TMDL, it is simply necessary to ensure that all source loads ultimately comply with the Basin Plan Water Quality Objective. Now, on the next slide, I'll show you the Basin Plan's Water Quality Objective for fecal coliform. This is the Basin Plan Water Quality Objective for fecal coliform for contact recreation. I'm not going to read off the entire narrative, but let me highlight for you a couple of the key elements of it. There's two numeric criteria in this water quality objective for fecal coliform. One is a geometric mean of at least 5 samples over 30 days, not to exceed 200 organisms per 100 milliliters. And the second numeric criteria is an upper threshold of 400 organisms not to have more than 10% exceedances. So to reemphasize, this is a concentration-based TMDL. The TMDL will be equal to the water quality objective for contact recreation. In order to achieve the TMDL, it's simply necessary to ensure that all source loads ultimately comply with an existing basin plan water quality objective. Allocations are the portions of a TMDL that are assigned to each identified point source and non-point source of pollution. This table outlines the source categories and their respective allocations that are anticipated to achieve the TMDL. All source categories, with one exception, have an allocation equal to the Basin Plan Water Quality Objective. And recall that I showed you the water quality objective on the last slide. Now, because human fecal material represents a higher pathogenic risk, discharges of human fecal material are given an allocation of 0. In other words, no discharge is allowed. Also, it is worth noting at this point that non-controllable natural sources are not subject to water board regulation. So simply put, responsible parties are not required to take any actions to reduce loading from wildlife or non-controllable natural sources.
Could I interrupt you 1 second, and if you could just go back to that slide, I have a question. Maybe other people have the same question. What does it mean, then, if the natural sources are causing, let's say the natural sources in and of themselves are allocating the water quality objective in terms of concentration?
So in other words, if the natural sources are causing the impairment, is that?
Well, let's just say that there's enough that they're contributing that they're using up that, was it 200 or 240?
200.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing to recognize about these allocations and about concentration-based TMDLs in general is that the allocations are not additive because
right.
It's a volumetric measure. And the easiest way to describe that is if you had two glasses of water, each with 200 bacteria in them, and you added them together, the concentration wouldn't go up to 400 because the volume of water goes up. It's a volumetric thing. The concentration would still be 200. So the allocations are not additive, and they don't sum up together. So I don't. Was that addressing kind of your question?
Well, I think it does. What you're saying then is that even if wildlife are contributing as much as the water quality objective,
or more,
that doesn't do away with the requirement for the other categories to also
correct.
Fall under the water quality standard.
That's correct. If wildlife theoretically meets its allocation, 200,
right.
You know, runoff from forest or runoff from natural areas is meeting its allocation. If runoff from pasture or irrigated cropland is meeting its allocation, you know, there should not be a condition of impairment if all sources are meeting their allocation, including wildlife, if wildlife is meeting its allocation.
Right, and if wildlife isn't. Let's say wildlife is such a contributing component that the water quality impairment is always going to be over the 200 number.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that these other categories don't also have to reduce or eliminate their contribution to fall under the standard.
That's correct. Even in cases where natural sources or non-controllable sources are causing a condition of impairment, that does not give license to other source categories to magnify or exacerbate that condition of impairment. They still need to meet their allocations. Now, there is site-specific objectives. The board can adopt site-specific objectives where it has been demonstrated clearly that natural sources are causing a sustained and chronic condition of impairment, and therefore, even if source categories meet their allocation, the impairment can never be removed. So the board can adopt site-specific water quality objectives in those types of cases.
Okay. Thank you.
These are the regulatory mechanisms that are anticipated to implement the TMDL. Existing water board permits, the human fecal material discharge prohibition, the domestic animal waste discharge prohibition, and existing state law and county ordinances. Now, with regard to implementation, this table outlines the source categories, the responsible parties, and the respective regulatory mechanisms that will implement the TMDL. For municipal stormwater entities, we propose that they will address discharges of bacteria through their NPDES permits. For sanitary sewer collection systems, we propose that they will demonstrate compliance through their existing waste discharge requirements. For lands containing homeless encampments or persons, we propose that they will be subject to compliance with the human fecal material discharge prohibition. And it's worth noting here that we did give you a supplemental sheet with some proposed changes in which we document that staff recognize The difficulty, because of homelessness is a complex social problem involving human beings, that we recognize the difficulty of landowners potentially meeting this allocation, and we are cognizant of that fact, and we will work with responsible parties to achieve reasonable reasonable results with regard to meeting that allocation. Owners and operators of lands with domestic animals would be subject to the domestic animal waste discharge prohibition. And owners and operators of lands used for or containing illegal dumping are required to comply with existing state law and county ordinances pertaining to illegal dumping. As I mentioned before, natural sources are not subject to regulation.
Before you get off that slide, Pete, so the domestic animal one, that is of particular interest to me because I'd like to know how you're going to grapple with that. Do you know how many landowners, property owners you're dealing with?
Yeah, at this point we don't have, we haven't quantified the number of property owners or landowners. There's, significant amount of uncertainty about that. We anticipate that if the TMDL is adopted, that as we move into implementation, we will be doing a lot of outreach with the regulated community to identify reporting mechanisms with their help, and their input, reporting mechanisms to allow landowners and responsible parties to comply with the prohibition and the state's non-point source policy.
And I think what's interesting about this to me, and I don't know if we have anything in place already like this in the region, but here we're going to be regulating without a permit, but through the basin plan prohibition. That's the mechanism.
Mechanism, yes.
There really isn't a file set up with a permit and a permit number for a particular landowner.
That's correct.
You're going to set some other mechanism up.
That's correct. There are three sort of tracks of compliance with the domestic animal waste discharge prohibition that we've included in the resolution. So there's three sort of conceptual tracks of compliance. But as far as the reporting requirements and the verification requirements, those to a large extent still need to be worked out. There are other regions in Region 2 and Region 6 have grazing land waivers where they have identified some reporting requirements and verification requirements, and we could look at those as a possible model. We would also like to get input from the regulated community as far as what would be useful in terms of reporting and verification requirements, and get their input on that too. So that's kind of where that stands at this point. So the short answer is no. There's not a formal compliance method in place yet in terms of reporting and verification. These are the responsible parties. I'm not going to read off the whole list, but I'm going to scroll through them so you can see who they are. The city, the county, owners and operators, homeless persons, illegal dumping, Castroville. We did receive a substantial number of public comments. These are the organizations and entities that submitted comments. We received over 60 comments from 14 different organizations and entities. We responded to each comment. And the comments and responses are contained in Attachment 6 of the staff report. We responded to each comment and indicated if or how we changed our draft documentation based on the comment. Now, because I've got a slide here that outlines some of the major recurring comments that we received, but because of the large quantity of comments we received, we are relying on the full description of the comments and staff responses in Attachment 6 of the staff report.
You have a list of the individual public comments that you could put up? It's page 1 of Attachment 6, but I think that would be helpful
for the
public to see.
Yeah. Chris?
We have an Elmo machine or overhead projector. We could just put page one up to save some time. Here. Go ahead. Why don't we just do that just to make it easy? Quick.
I have a race of the technologies here.
Yeah. Here we go, the old-fashioned way. Go ahead.
Maybe while, I guess you got to switch the feed, huh? That list, I don't think it would be complete because it wouldn't show the supplemental sheet.
Right, but at least
comments.
Also, there were a few late comments, and I've got a slide on that, but the late comments we received, and these were the comments we received during the public comment period. We also received late comments from County of Monterey Health Department, from Darlene Din, the ag consultant, and Scott Violini sent in more comments. He commented during the formal public comment period and then sent late comments into. So that should be a complete, tabulation of all the comments we received.
Go ahead, Mr. Hayashi.
Go back to where we have the homeless people living on the land next to the creek, and the discharge comes off, and it's more than the 200, and I own the land. You need to give me a little clarification when you say we have understanding of what's going on, because it's politically incorrect to take a bulldozer and bulldoze those people off and take them to the next. So how are we going to handle that?
Yeah, you're right. It's and we recognize and are cognizant of, you're dealing with human beings and a complex social problem, and you just, you don't, generally, it's probably not acceptable just to kick them off, And the short answer is we don't have any really solid ideas of how you would have those landowners achieve their allocation. What we've said is that we are cognizant that it's a very complex issue, and it's going to require, in terms of the responsible parties or the landowners, it's going to require coming up with some sort of, practical and reasonable solution, because as you mentioned, you're dealing with human beings, and you just can't drive a bulldozer over it and stop it. So, so the short answer is we don't have a specific sort of implementation requirements or reporting requirements developed for that yet, other than to say we have a conceptual, in the resolution, we have a conceptual, some conceptual ideas of the compliance measures, but in terms of implementation, that's something we need to work with landowners or responsible parties and be cognizant of how complex it is.
That's still not my answer. I still don't have an answer. Be cognizant. Just not do anything about it.
No, I think we do want to do something about it, but like I said, we don't. We have some conceptual requirements in the resolution, but we don't have. We don't have any formal sort of implementation actions or formal enforcement actions to address that.
But it will at some time point, it will come to some sort of an enforcement action. But we need to fix it now. Something, because that's out of your control.
Yeah, the homeless encampments. It's like I said, we're cognizant that it's a complex problem, and it involves multiple jurisdictions, public agencies, perhaps private landowners, And so, you know, we're cognizant of that, but we don't have, you know, a formal implementation strategy at this point.
Yeah, Mr. Hashin? This is Chris Rose at the regional board, and we had a similar conversation last year when we had the three bacteria TMDLs, and we identified homeless persons as being a source in those TMDLs. And the short answer is we don't know how we're going to do it. And so when Pete says that we're going to be cognizant, I think what he means is that we're going to be sensitive to the issue, the fact that the municipalities have to address this. They have to deal with it. And it isn't – there isn't an easy solution. There simply isn't. But I think that, like, what we're going to have to do with our non-point sources is we're going to have to work with municipalities to come up with something that is hopefully reasonable, you know, a reasonable solution to it. So we don't know exactly how it's going to be addressed. In fact, the municipalities don't even know how it's going to be addressed. They're still working on this problem.
Yeah, but at this time and point, the landowner cannot be held responsible for that.
Well, at this point in time, because in this particular watershed, that's true because the prohibition isn't in place. However, at some point in time, when that prohibition is in place, the responsibility ultimately lands on the landowner.
But if it's out of his control, what do you do?
Well, maybe I can add something to that. So
it's going to come to that at some time and point.
Yeah,
we need to start thinking about that now before later.
Just to clarify what the board, to do it, when the board is obligated to do a TMDL because the water body is impaired, they first have to establish what are the sources and whether the sources are controllable or not controllable. It's required by law to identify those sources. So whether or not homeless encampments are actually controllable, the board must identify that. The other part is the board is then obligated to have a mechanism to have some kind of way to take care of that particular load. And in this case, the proposal is consistent with three other TMDLs you did, was to have a prohibition because discharging human sewage to the water body is a very high-risk thing. So the prohibition is the appropriate way to do that. And a prohibition then is how you implement that becomes a discretionary matter for the board, and it doesn't mean that you have to tomorrow suddenly enforce that prohibition and go either make landowners or homeless people, you know, landowners do something or homeless people, you know, kick them out. It means that you do have to start figuring out some way to address that. So if your concern is that suddenly landowners are going to have to take care of this really complex problem, adopting the TMDL won't do that. It'll just establish that, yes, this is a source, just a factual issue. And as the board, we have to say in a TMDL how it will be implemented. And there could be permits or orders or prohibitions. Those are the basic options. And unless you have something, the TMDL is not complete.
But I think what John is saying is that once this TMDL is put into place, the particular situation he's describing could lead to an immediate enforcement action because human fecal material has a zero tolerance for discharge. And if a landowner has some homeless people on their property that are discharging, that could be an immediate enforcement action. Could be.
Yes, correct. It could be.
Could be.
And then just whether it is really, as the staff is trying to explain, it would be. No, understand that's complex. It would require a lot of working with various people to try to make it a fair and safe process. So,
not good enough.
And I understand the concern. It would not be a legal TMDL if you don't have a mechanism, and so if you try to make landowners have a permit to allow homeless people on their property, that's not going to work. An order mechanism isn't going to work. So the only mechanism that's available to the board legally is to say discharging human fecal coliform to the creek is illegal. So it may be, you know, so how do you enforce that? There's lots of different ways.
We have an incomplete TMDL.
Well, now then you'll have three TMDLs that have it and one that doesn't. that's another problem.
As we go on, like Chairman Young said, that it could. And before it happens, I need to have faith that the outcome is going to be the way that.
Well, why don't we discuss this as part of our deliberation in the end, because there'll be some other issues that we need to kind of look at. And it, there's a number of sticky wickets like that with any TMDL. And this is a particularly challenging social issue to deal with. But go ahead.
Okay. So the public comments and staff responses, again, there was a large quantity of comments, so I can't address one each one individually. But I'm going to show you a suite of comments that are largely representative of most of the comments that we received. This comment, the prohibition, it's overly restrictive and therefore economically burdensome.
Now, both prohibitions?
The domestic animal discharge prohibition is overly restrictive, economically burdensome. And there was a widespread impression that this prohibition constitutes an outright ban or a zero discharge requirement. Our response is that, no, it is not an outright ban or a zero discharge requirement. The load allocation for domestic animal discharges is equal to the basin plan water quality objective. Demonstrating compliance with the prohibition will be demonstrated by it ultimately achieving compliance with the basin plan water quality objective. Therefore, the load allocation is not zero. There were comments that the Rec 1, the contact recreation, the Rec 1 beneficial use is inappropriate because swimming is impractical in most of the water bodies in the project area. And also there were questions about the reasonableness of applying a Rec 1 standard to ephemeral water bodies that don't have flow for most of the year. With regard to Rec 1, it's important to recognize that in accordance with the basin plan, the Rec 1 standard is not simply limited to full body contact as, for example, swimming. Rec 1 is broadly defined to include any body contact where there's a reasonable possibility of ingestion of water, including but not limited to wading or fishing. With regard to ephemeral flows, our Central Coast Basin Plan clearly states that designated beneficial uses of water must be maintained for all waters of the state, whether it's an ephemeral water body or a perennial water body, whether the flow is continuous or whether the flow is intermittent. It's a clear statement in our Central Coast Basin Plan. There were a lot of questions about if responsible parties were required to reduce loads from wildlife. We addressed that. That's not subject to regulation, and responsible parties are not required to reduce those loads. There were a lot of concerns that the prohibition, the domestic animal discharge prohibition, constituted a mandate to fence off all streams. With regard to this comment, staff notes that the Water Board cannot mandate or require the method of compliance to achieve the load allocation. So therefore, this prohibition does not constitute a mandate or a requirement to fence off all streams.
But I think that the concern might also be that that could be the only way to comply. So therefore, it's not maybe an outright mandate, but how else are you going to keep the cattle, you know, from getting into a stream if you don't fence?
There's a number, and we're not agricultural experts, but we understand from public agencies with expertise that there are a number of animal management or land management practices that can limit the amount of time the cattle might loaf in a stream or be in a stream. And certainly we recognize that it's not necessarily, you know, beneficial to exclude cows completely, 100% from streams. You know, there's certain benefits to grazing the, you know, cows grazing the non-native vegetation out of those riparian areas. So we recognize that, you know, a total exclusionary approach, while it's true, could probably limit all discharges. It's probably, you know, not realistic or even that beneficial. And there's a number of management measures that can reduce discharges into the creek or into the water bodies. There were a number of assertions that our source analysis was inadequate and that there wasn't enough scientific peer review. With regard to this comment, staff utilized source analysis methods that are United States Environmental Protection Agency, US EPA, recognized or recommended. We received scientific peer review from two researchers at UC Davis. In addition, although we are not required to do so, we submitted our project report to US EPA for their technical review and comment. As such, we do not concur that the source analysis is inadequate or there wasn't enough peer review. US EPA has also communicated to us that they find the technical analysis to be appropriate. There were concerns that there weren't enough public meetings with regard to TMDL development, and there was insufficient review time for the final project report. Staff did hold a number of stakeholder meetings in 2006 and 2007. The project report was sent out for scientific peer review in the spring of 2008. Unfortunately, because of state budget issues, the project report was held up in scientific peer review for over a year, from the spring of 2008 until May of 2009. Consequently, during this time, staff were reassigned to other priorities, and there was no TMDL development during that time and no public meetings during that time. So that was a long block of time where it was held up in scientific peer review. Subsequent to receiving scientific peer review, we did hold another stakeholder meeting in August of 2009. We informed stakeholders of the status of the project and provided them a timeline in terms of the approval process right through up to and including the board consideration. Representatives for livestock owners have developed, and they noted that they have developed a draft non-point source grazing management plan whose stated intention is to address pathogen loading to water bodies, and they questioned the need for regulation. Now, with regard to the cattlemen's grazing management plan, staff emphasized that the plan in and of itself cannot be used as an alternative or in lieu of regulation. The state non-point source pollution policy clearly indicates that non-point sources of pollution must be under regulation, either through waste discharge requirements, waivers, or prohibitions. But it is also worth noting that management plans that are developed independently are not divergent goals with the non-point source policy. They can be used, the management measures that are independently developed and implemented can be used to demonstrate compliance with the state non-point source policy and with the proposed prohibition. Finally, we did receive late comments from the County of Monterey. They stated that the septics in the Balsa Knolls community, which is an unincorporated area, just community just north of the city of Salinas, should be considered a potential source of pathogen loading from failing septics. Now, when we were developing this TMDL project, we had previously received information from the county that they did not see much evidence that there were discharges of septic effluent from Balsa Knolls into Santa Rita Creek. But based on this newer reporting from the county, staff may further assess the potential for pathogen loading from failing septics during the TMDL implementation phase, which is consistent with our project report. And the county has indicated they are comfortable with this approach. Now, beginning to wrap up here, I did want to show one data slide just to illustrate for you and drive home the nature of the impairment and the magnitude of the impairment. This is a box and whiskers plot. The horizontal, monitoring sites are shown on the horizontal line on the bottom, monitoring sites from the Lower Salinas River watershed. The vertical axis represents increasing fecal coliform concentration. Now, what the box and whiskers represents is a range of the observed fecal coliform from the monitoring site. The horizontal line represents the median of the data, that is the midpoint of the data. And the ends of the whiskers represent the 10th percentile and 90th percentile of the data. What this means is the box and whiskers is showing a representative range of all the data, excluding the extreme high end and low end data. Now, I'm going to plot on this graph the basin plan fecal coliform water quality objective that I showed you in a previous slide. This is the 400 organisms criteria, and this is the 200 criteria. Remember, I showed these in a previous slide for the water quality objective. Data that plots above those lines is considered an exceedance of the water quality objective. To put it quite simply, any data associated with those box and whiskers plotting above those red lines is considered bad. So the takeaway message from this slide is that bacteria impairments throughout the watershed are sustained, routine, and widespread. Finally, we do recommend adoption of the proposed basin plan amendment, including the supplemental sheet with proposed changes you were provided with. The amendments include total maximum daily loads and implementation plan for fecal coliform, adding the watershed to the domestic animal waste discharge prohibition, and adding the watershed to the existing human fecal material discharge prohibition. It is worth noting that the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, US EPA, has reviewed the basin plan amendment package. They find the technical analysis to be appropriate, and US EPA has communicated to us they are in fully supportive of adoption of these amendments. Adoption of these proposed amendments has the potential to address a significant water quality impairment in multiple stream reaches in one of the Central Coast region's most bacteria-impaired watersheds. Also, adoption of these amendments will move the Water Board closer to our Region 3 vision of healthy, functioning watersheds by the year 2025, which is 15 years from now. And that concludes the presentation, and at this point, I'll be happy to answer any other questions the board has.
Board questions? Okay. We can probably should break for lunch. The food is here. But one thing I'd like to ask you to do, Pete, is to put up the implementation part for the domestic animal prohibition, which I looked at, and perhaps because I think it might be helpful for people to see before public comment starts, because it, you know, my question was, okay, what are people going to have to do in response to this that have domestic animals? And so I think it would be helpful if you just kind of went through, you have it bulleted, and I think it is, clarifies things, that there are some options there. It's on page 174 of the document. Is that the project?
Technical.
Okay. Well, this is one page. Also, however you want to do it, doesn't matter. Okay. Yes. Well, I was thinking you could do it now so people could be thinking about this.
Sure.
I've got a slide of that, actually.
Okay, so there's some options here, right? I mean, people can go to the first point.
Yes.
And say, if they believe that they're not contributing anything to the exceedances, then there is a way for them to essentially document that, prove it to staff, and not have to do anything more.
That's correct.
Okay, and that would be item number one on here.
Correct.
Can you address that a little bit, and then what number two is, and then what number three is?
We have identified, as you said, three options for compliance. We wanted to provide the maximum flexibility. The first option is for owners and operators of lands with domestic animals to show that their property, their animals, their operations are not contributing to an impairment of a water body, And that could be, and we've identified conceptually some ways they could do that. One is, the most simple one is, they no longer have domestic animals on that property. Secondly is they could demonstrate that there are no surface waters, either perennial or ephemeral, adjacent to their property or on their property where domestic animal waste could have the potential to discharge. And the third option is if the water bodies that are adjacent or within their property are currently meeting the water quality objective, they're obviously not contributing or causing to a condition of impairment. And there are some water bodies in the project area that are currently not exceeding the water quality objective. So those are conceptually sort of three categories.
But they'd have to have someone do some sampling and monitoring and provide water quality results to staff to document that. Is that what number one?
Or it's even possible that perhaps we even have data today that we could point to that we could say landowner X is adjacent to a water body that we have data for, and we can demonstrate that that water body is currently meeting the prohibition, which is basically the prohibition just says you have to meet water quality objectives for bacteria.
And then number two is if there is a problem.
Yes, number two would be for property owners where there could be a potential problem. They have domestic animals. There is some kind of surface water on their property, and there's potential for animal waste to discharge to that. The option two would be for people who can at least give us a plan for how they will ultimately come into compliance with the prohibition. And the state has a non-point source policy where the plan has to meet five key elements in terms of implementation, verification, and trackable management measures that we can track and kind of check these people off our list. It's also important to note that compliance with their load allocations, there's a TMDL time frame for compliance that is over the long term, 13 years to comply with the TMDL. So we'll be measuring TMDL or compliance with the prohibition over the long term as in part by tracking management measures implemented and seeing progression towards the water quality objective over the long term. And then option three, which, it's probably not an option most people would want to choose to have, but we put it in there just for completeness and comprehensiveness, is people could apply for a permit, a waste discharge requirements, under the California Water Code. That would be another compliance option, and we have a responsibility to provide that as an option, but I don't think a lot of people would probably take that one.
Okay. All right. Any board questions before we take a break? Okay. All right. Thank you. So when should we return? We have closed session?
Brief one.
We do. 1 o'clock? Okay.
Does that allow these folks enough time to?
Does that give everyone an hour? Okay, so 1:15, we'll report back here and proceed then with public comment, right, Mr. Briggs?
Right, and also just so the board members and everybody else knows, the Cattlemen's Association requested 15 minutes and you granted that.
And so all those that want to speak to the board on this matter, please make sure you filled out a speaker card and pass it up to staff so we can know who wants to speak. Thank you.